Well, it's time for us to talk about the gender investment gap in South Africa, not the gender pay gap. If you look at Kantar South Africa research on the South African woman gender investment gap, women are less likely to invest than men. And clearly, this could put them at a big financial disadvantage in life. Now, the gender gap we usually think of relates to differences between the salaries that are paid to men and women. But there is a similar problem when it comes to investing money for the future. If you look at the International Labour Organization, the average global gap is around 20%. So we're joined now by Thandi Ngwane, who is head of investments for Standard Bank Group in South Africa. Thandi, welcome to the show. There are obviously a number of factors underpinning the gender investment gap, with the most obvious being that lower average rates of pay lead to it. But I'm sure there must be others as well. Can you just tell us more?
Yes, of course. I think the first one is actually quite closely linked to the wage gap, and that's the gender wealth gap. So economically active women, we know, tend to earn less than their male counterparts. And the kind of knock-on effect is that, you know, women also tend to have less wealth. And some studies have actually stated that the wealth gap can be more than twice the wage gap. So, of course, women have less money to invest. And I think, secondly, many women don't feel they fully understand investing, and consequently, investments can be perceived to be somewhat complex. And so not having sufficient time or the right expertise or even access to investment-related information can be a deterrent in itself. And then I think thirdly, you know, quite often the way investors behave while they're invested can have a material impact on their investment return. You know, there have been countless studies done around the world just looking at an investment return versus an investor return.
Yeah.
And we know the investment return is typically, if you're invested for a period of time from start to finish, you don't disinvest throughout, that return that the investment generally generates is quite different to what investors see. And that's often prompted just by behavior. The great thing is that women tend to stay the course, ironically. So we tend to stay invested for a longer period of time. But what plays to our detriment is that women tend to stay invested for longer in less risk-averse assets. And so, again, investment returns tend to be quite poor over time.
I mean, it's such an important distinction to make that between staying invested for the long term, but also staying invested in the right assets for the long term. And to come back to your earlier point about confidence, you know, even in my immediate circle, when I chat to my female friends and my male friends, it's most often the male in the household, the guy in the household who has a relationship with a financial advisor, and he's doing the financial planning and all of that, even though it's a dual income household. It's just the way the roles have evolved over time. There's not too much thought that's actually given to the fact that this has to be a dual income, dual decision making process. And you've got to build that relationship with both, you know, the head of the household from a male and a female perspective. You know, I don't know why. It's just the way we've done things. It's cultural, maybe. But these things do persist. And often what I find through the research as well is that the female spouse tends to outlive the male spouse. So when that happens, there's no relationship with that financial advisor during those later years. So it really comes back to, you know, how we make things better. How do we close the loop here and improve things? But lately, we've seen many women, I think, moving abroad to pursue work opportunities and careers. So how does closing the gender pay gap help the economy, especially our economy here in South Africa?
Yes. You know, women make up about 44% of South Africa's labor force, and yet women are approximately 51% of South Africa's population. So already, if you're talking about women immigrating, this immediately impacts the representation of women in the workforce. And so if a trend like this continues, we potentially see a further widening of the gender pay gap, because it does unfortunately tend to be the higher income earners whose skills are more transferable. Now, if we consider just COVID alone, that has shown us that it's the most diverse economies that are more resilient and are able to make swifter recovery and ensure continued growth over time. So, of course, our ability to actually increase the participation of women in the workforce means greater economic reward. So even if you consider our very own Stats SA, they have for a number of years now reported that it's actually men who are more likely to be in paid employment than women, whereas far more women also make up their living through the informal economy. So one can't really underestimate the benefit of increasing women's participation in the workforce, because ultimately it can contribute to not only increased economic productivity, but also economic growth. And so I think closing the gender pay gap can contribute to increasing a more equal society, and perhaps also help achieve financial and economic independence more broadly.
When it comes down to how women tend to perform, and you touched on it earlier by saying that women do stay invested for far longer, that's probably one of the best investor behaviors to be encouraging. Do we have research that indicates generally how women perform as investors versus men?
Yes, well, typically you find that men tend to be more open to taking risk. So you'll typically find them in equity type investments. And often men can also be referred to in some of these studies as being more of the traders. So quite open to taking a risk, trying different avenues, and also exploring the different types of investments. So anything from private equity to hedge funds to pure equity. Women's behavior in these studies tends to be underpinned far more as being far more conservative. So largely cash or CPI plus one or two in terms of investment return. And so when you look at the correlation between time spent in your investment versus kind of your risk reward equation, we know that typically, you know, the higher the risk, the higher the potential return, women just simply aren't exposed to that correlation.
So bottom line is we need to now start shifting this. We really have to start ensuring that women are more motivated to invest despite all of these challenges. How do we do that? How do we start having this conversation at a level that starts to move the needle in a society where we have all of these challenges?
I think a key motivator is that investing allows you the ability to achieve financial freedom. You know, many years ago, women didn't have a bank account in their own name, let alone an investment or retirement annuity. So I think that move to becoming financially independent and managing your own investments is a big motivator. But we also know that women tend to take, you know, that long-term view, as we've been discussing. And we know that time is almost like that magic ingredient that allows your invested money to grow because of the benefits of compounding. And so if you think about it, some of the longest investments, you know, you're probably likely to ever make would probably be things like your children's education, your retirement, or maybe even creating generational wealth. And these are all things that take time, they take a long-term view, and you don't have to do everything yourself. I think that's a really important point. You know, our male counterparts tend to be well-read, are quite comfortable with experimenting in the markets, and often as women, because we feel like we might not have the financial or the investment know-how, this can often deter us from investing. So the important thing is that you don't have to do it all yourself. You can actually find yourself a trusted financial advisor who can help you navigate through this investment landscape and help you find what makes most sense for your personal circumstances. You know, there's such interesting stats out there that say that, you know, we know that there are more women managing daily expenses than actually leading long-term financial planning. And so wouldn't this be a great opportunity to actually help make some of those changes?
Absolutely. I mean, if it is women who are in charge of that household monthly budget, then to bring that side of the equation into that conversation with the financial planner makes 100% sense. Tandi, before we wrap things up, just tell us, what are your views? And you mentioned generational wealth. What are your views on generational wealth being one of those key drivers of financial inclusion when we talk broadly about financial inclusion in South Africa? Because I'm very mindful of the fact that, you know, because of our history in the past, there are certain taxes that are borne by certain sectors of society that limit the scope for that kind of wealth creation. How important is it that we have this conversation around generational wealth here being a driver of financial inclusion?
I think it's absolutely crucial, and I don't think we do enough of it as South Africans. In fact, there's such a great quote by Warren Buffett who says, "Someone sitting in the shade today because someone planted a tree a long time ago." And of course, Warren Buffett is speaking to long-term investing and the fact that, you know, instead of kind of looking for easy gains or quick fixes, we need to be prepared to put in the time. And it's very much the same with, of course, creating generational wealth. And I think it's an aspect of financial planning that's really geared towards passing down those significant financial resources to future generations. Now, if you think of, you know, places like the US, they talk of, you know, about 70% of wealthy families that will actually lose their wealth by the second generation. Cool. And 90% will lose it by the third. So I guess having clear intentions, you know, clear communication between generations is important, you know, to creating that generational wealth, but also that financial planning process. And quite often, I don't think we consider it as going beyond just estate planning or having sufficient life cover. But it's actually more about also creating that stability in the financial resources that are being passed on from one generation to the next. And so I think achieving this should be part of, you know, anybody's financial planning. So absolutely crucial, I think, when it comes to looking at successive, you know, financial inclusion. But of course, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm just blown away by that that research. I mean, the fact that
it's a scary statistic.
90% of intergenerational wealth is lost by the second generation. And, you know, so much work, so much hard work, decades goes into building that up, and to see it lost like that, you know, really speaks just to a lack of proper financial planning, to your earlier point, Tandi.
Absolutely. And then lastly, Michael, I think on financial inclusion, you know, in a country like ours, it's clearly about more than just affordability, but also the opportunity and the availability of quality investment solutions, you know, for all. So, you know, we can see how over the years there's certainly been a greater move within the investment industry to make sure that, you know, investments are easily accessible through fantastic apps that are now available, heightened financial education specifically geared towards women. And so we can definitely see that almost partnering between financial knowledge, financial education, and the drive to make use of this longer term financial planning are clearly strategies that are being employed to make sure that the needs of more women investors are actually being met.
Yeah, and the broader effects will be felt throughout South African society, as you mentioned. Tandi Ngwane, head of Melville Douglas South Africa, thank you so much for taking the time out to talk to us about the gender investment gap in South Africa, part of the conversation around the gender pay gap, but certainly so much more than that if you look at the research and what it indicates about the size of the gap and what we need to do to close it. You're listening to Hot Business.